Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon after the conclusion of the Autumn Nations series. Absolutely awesome it was too. I'm Tim in the rugby dungeon with JB.
Hello, Tim.
And with Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And we've got two podcasts for you this week. One of them is JB Heaven and one of them is JB Hell.
Indeed.
We're going to start with JB Hell. All right. Well, I need to keep the carrot dangling
to keep you enthusiastic.
To keep you enthusiastic and in, because otherwise you'll just. So this podcast is going to be about international rugby, and the other podcast is going to be about Razzie Erasmus, Steve Diamond, George.
Yeah, Ford, good stuff.
Local rugby,
the stuff you want. Well, this can have some local rugby, can't it?
Yeah,
a little bit of local. Where did you watch the game?
Which game?
England.
England at home.
Where do you watch it?
I watched the first half on the train and the second half at TalkSport.
Nice. I watched it at Oldham Rugby Club.
Nice, your nemesis.
Oh, God, yeah. You don't get anything for free in Oldham. We did beat them. The score does not reflect how hard the game was and how hard they are, to be fair. But yeah, finally, after five attempts, I think, I finally got a win against Oldham.
In Oldham as well.
In Oldham.
In their own backyard.
I know. So
they don't like it up them.
I'm not saying a single thing because I've got to play him again soon, so I'm just going to go forward.
Can I just say, I was almost swore then, but this is how passionate I feel about it. I love rugby so much.
Weekends like this, God, what a weekend.
It takes me a little bit of time to get into internationals. Six Nations I'm in from the very beginning because it's Six Nations. The awesome test I don't really care about. But then after 3 weeks of it, you do start to get a bit excited. So they drip feed you these nonsense games right at the start, like Wales All Blacks, and Japan played a few early games.
England Tonga.
Yeah,
waste of everyone's time.
But then when you get to the actual meaty part of it at the end, it is pretty good, I've got to say.
This weekend and last weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, the games, the England-Australia was not the best spectacle, but the Ireland-New Zealand game last weekend and Wales-South Africa, they were awesome games. And this week, the England-South Africa and the New Zealand-France game, wow.
Yeah, completely. The France game was one of my favourite games to watch in years and years and years. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I love watching the All Blacks get beaten. I respect the All Blacks immensely. But I just... It's like wrestling. You always want the heels to win.
Yeah, yeah. And you want the underdogs to win.
But France underdogs, they're so massive.
Well, France, they'd lost the previous 13 encounters.
They hadn't won on home soil in 21 years, was it?
Yeah, 21 years.
Is that right?
And in Paris, since 1973.
Yeah.
Something like that.
The 21 years, obviously, France beat New Zealand in a World Cup quarterfinal that France were hosting, but the game was played in Wales.
Yes, it was. I was at that game.
I was there.
Oh, that's why it was a home. So that was classed as a home game. No.
It was classed as a home game, but it wasn't on French soil.
It was on French soil, yeah.
Yes. When El Asad runs away from the All Blacks to kick the ball out.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff.
Thierry Dussertoir tackled everything.
Was that. I always get confused because Thierry Dussertoir has had two phenomenal games against the All Blacks. I can't remember if it's that one.
Probably both, to be fair.
But
I think that was the one where he
scored the try and set the record for...
He scored the try in the other one. Yes.
Yes.
He scored the try in the other one, the 2011 World Cup final, but he set record, which was 28, I think it was.
Because the try was scored in the Wales game by Jojom.
in the Wales game. Well,
yeah, the one held in Wales by Yannick Jourgeon.
The Cardiff one. Was the one in Cardiff, 2007, the one where they took their tracksuit tops off and had the Tricolour T-shirts with Chabal just pulling those faces?
No, I don't think... Hang on, which one?
For the 2007.
Hacker. Not in Wales, they didn't do that in
Wales. I can't remember that. What I do remember was the All Blacks were wearing the same kit. They were wearing the grey kit.
Yeah,
rather than their black kit.
Well, they looked nice.
In that game, the French home kit was very, 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 very dark blue. Not like this kind of electric, not electric blue, but royal blue is a better description of their kit this week.
Well, I mean, 40 points on the All Blacks is delightful to see, isn't it? Delightful.
I always love watching the All Blacks play, and I do love the All Blacks getting beat. It doesn't happen very often. It's happened 2 weeks on the bounce, and both games, France and Ireland, were underdogs going into those games.
So despite everything we just said about how hard it is for France to beat the All Blacks, I think they still have the best winning percentage of any Northern Hemisphere team against the All Blacks.
Just have a look. I'm right. So this is the Hacker in the 2007 World Cup quarter-final.
Is that Cardiff?
This is in Cardiff.
Oh, right.
New Zealand in the grey kit. France have got their tracksuit tops off on in the Tricolour colours with the T-shirts, and they are a foot away from New Zealand doing the Hacker. That was the best Hacker ever.
Do you know, we've signed a trade deal with New Zealand which protects the Hacker.
What?
Yeah, seriously, like in the trade deal, which covers things like cheese and meat. The hacker can't be done by anyone else other than sanctioned people from New Zealand, allegedly.
So it's like a protected commodity, like what have we got?
Stilton.
Melton Mowbray pies. It's the equivalent.
Cornish pasties.
I mean,
is that a thing?
I mean, it is a commercial dance, so you may as well protect it. I guess so. Commercial jig.
Well, it's definitely valuable because it's the ultimate curtain raiser. I wish they would let them.
You're not allowed to do anything though with the.
No,
hacker.
I know it's annoying. You have to stand all 20 meters away and just
show respect.
Yeah,
I wouldn't. Why should I?
Yeah.
Why should I?
Do you remember when we watched the Hacker practice?
Yes.
In Chicago.
Do you remember the only time I've seen New Zealand live and I missed the Hacker because you guys wanted to have lunch in Rome.
And one extra glass of very crisp dry white wine.
It was lovely wine, but don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I've never seen the Hacker.
That was
live.
A real... we've seen it in training too. From the owner's box in bloody... Soldier Field.
Yeah.
So, it's a bit of an eye-opener that because... they perform their little jig very well. I mean, they really practice it. But they have to practice it. They practice it, from what I can tell, every time they go on the field. So they go out to train, they do a quick hacker, and then run about.
Yeah, dance practice.
Yeah, dance practice. They literally do dance practice. That's why they stay so humble. Oh,
it was good. It was really good. So you can email us, contacttagechasers@gmail.com, and I will pepper the podcast with some of the correspondence we've had in this past week. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker, although I'm not really on there anymore. And if you haven't already, please hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And patreon.com/eggchasers as well. Thank you and welcome to our new patrons this week. Much appreciated.
Yes.
You're keeping the lights on. And couldn't do it without you.
You've got a tie to send to someone, Tim.
Yes, I do.
We need to sort out.
We've got some stash.
Now, just on France, I don't know. I've not looked at the figures yet. Obviously, I like a big pack. Everyone does. And I seem to think, when I think of Cameron Wockey, he's an enormous man.
Mm.
And for him to be the go-to line-out option for France, I thought was really interesting. Because I know he does some good line-out work. But if that's your line-out forward, your loose-head lock, that's an enormous team.
Well, I don't think Wockey's that big because, as in...
Yeah, you say that to his face.
He's massive, but he's not Paul Vallemse, not an Eben Etzebeth, and he's not a Lude.
Oh, don't know, have you seen his arms?
His arms are massive.
Unbelievable.
His shoulders and his wingspan. But
yeah.
So I just looked him up. Height and weight, listed.
I'm going to guess...
6'6", 115.
Yeah, in my mind, he's about 6'6", 150. Yeah, about that.
He's listed as 6'5", 109. That's not actually that big.
No, it's not that big. But
so last week was the first time he's ever started as a second row.
Now he's doing
in professional rugby.
Wow.
Do you know that?
Yeah, because he is a back row, primarily.
He's a monster. He's an absolute animal.
But France, what's frightening about them is the balance that they've got. Well, for one, it doesn't seem to matter. Well, there's a number of things I find frightening about France. One is it doesn't seem to matter what players they put in.
Yeah.
They all just do a job.
Remarkable.
The depth is amazing, particularly like the back row.
Yeah.
Just change it up loads. Awesome. Secondly, it's the age profile of the side.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
They've got another 10 years of being this good.
And the other element is the balance, that the flair and the power.
And Jonathan Dante.
They can mix it. They can go and mix it up with South Africa, or they can let rip like Japan.
Yeah, they can play. And they do. What is quite amazing is they do both of those things in the one game. It's not a one or the other. It's both, depending on the situation. Because there's times in this game where they stuck it up the jumper and DuPont was box-kicking everything, and their kick chase was very effective, as you would expect a Sean Edwards team it to be. Mm. But there were other times when it was on, including like the Intermac break.
Oh, yes!
From that was outrageous!
He carries it over his own in-goal area.
Hands off two guys, gassing them.
Yeah, he has to run it out, because otherwise it's a 5 metre scrum, and boy does he run it out.
Oh.
And what's amazing, he runs it out and he offloads to, was it Jaminet?
Jaminet, yeah. Mel.
Big Mel. Swerves in, and Big Melvin just glides around the outside, and then of course, who is there? How could it be anyone other than Antoine Dupont, who was of course, instead of running back to defend a kick or play out of his own in-goal area, he is running forward immediately because he knows what Intermac's going to do.
Yeah, incredible.
It was so disappointing that it didn't end in a try. It was incredible play.
Yeah, we need more rugby players called Melvin.
Oh, a lot more.
I love it.
Or Percy. Another Percy would be good.
But that says everything about not just the French national team, but the whole French rugby. They've geared it towards the national team the last few years. They've got three domestic leagues. Melvin Jaminet made his debut in the summer after playing in Pro de Dirt last year with Perpignan, who are now in the top 14. And he's like to the man aboard, you know.
Yeah.
As much as we're dead excited about Freddie Stewart, and rightly so, and we'll talk about him in a bit, but he's come out of nowhere, 22 years old, second division,
running
international star.
Yeah, and the composure as well to be slotting the penalty. So he got 8 from 8 in that game, didn't miss a kick, 100% record, with that much pressure on him as well.
Here's an interesting thing about France to think about. There's been a lot of discussion, does the top 14 hurt the French national team because of, you know, foreign imports and whatnot, and they've changed their laws, the rules of the competition, so on and so forth, right? Great. But the turnaround in the French team has been remarkable, and it is, I think, because they've got such competitive league structure that when they do need to turn it on, when they do need to open those taps just a tiny bit, the results are remarkable.
Well, it means there's more players coming through at a better level, age 22, 23, because there's a lot of guys had they had the equivalent of our English Championship, underfunded, not televised, not covered, you know, less money for coaching and all of that, Melvin Jaminet wouldn't have come through into an England squad.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if this France team is like the missing piece of the puzzle for French rugby, which is, if the club game is flying at the moment and people are going to stadiums and watching it and they've got new TV deals and whatnot, but the international team is somewhat flagging a few years ago. Well, now the international team is flying too. If those two things can work in harmony with each other, that is a legitimate rugby superpower, probably forever. It wouldn't surprise me if it's what France do, which make the RFU go, hang on a minute, maybe we need to do some other things as well.
Yeah.
As some people have been saying for a while.
Yeah.
France are, at the moment, looking very, very good. It's that combination.
Stuart Hamilton-Smith has emailed us, contacttechchasers@gmail.com. Hi, Stu. He says, love the pod, etc, blah, 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 all that jazz. he's just on the subject, he talks about England a little bit, but on the subject of France v New Zealand, he says, I'm going to rewatch the game on Pornhub.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely filthy. Untermac belongs in the Louvre.
Oh,
he's Untermac. A beautiful man as well, isn't he?
He is.
So handsome. What a guy.
What a guy. And he loves being photographed in his pants. It's like a picture of him with DuPont in the changing room, and he's in his shorts, which leave very little to the imagination. It's almost like the camera's there. He's going, hold on, 1 second. Whip him down. There you go.
Well, I mean, a very famous, hot, mostly naked rugby player for almost all his career. Scrum off for Racing.
Machinot.
Lovely Maxime naked. Machinot. Love it.
Yeah. Well, he actually had...
was he on a model at some point?
There was definitely some... I've definitely seen multiple artsy black and white photos of him basically in the nude.
Yeah, yeah, they're mine.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where I've seen them. Have I got them from illicit means?
Was I blackmailing him? What was going on there?
Damn it, you've got them. That was my Christmas present to you. Sorted, Phil. Did you see the pictures of the France team getting off the bus?
No.
No.
So they were wearing suits, and it is clearly the French style. And I remember this because you mentioned Machinot. And when I went to the Racing Arena, and they have the big photos of the players before the game, and what the one of Machinot's, just the French style at the minute is top button undone, tie a bit loose, like you've just sort of rolled in about 3 a.m.
Galtier does that,
and it looks awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think I could pull it off the way they do.
This is why I like France. I definitely so much. Couldn't. This is why I don't support any international teams. But if I was to support an international team, it would be France.
Apart from maybe Wales.
No, not really.
Got an email here from Nick. Nick Markwell, contact@gmail.com. He said, I'm just going to jump to this bit. He says, I'm watching the French demolition of New Zealand, and a shot of a forlorn D-Mac came onto the screen sporting his...
Good email, this one.
...ridiculous mullet. I'd not noticed how ridiculous it was until they started losing every week. It got me thinking that among all the consternation in New Zealand at the losses, there may end up being a mullet backlash. And whether the future may lead to performance-related mullet permissions being granted by management, your thoughts on this crucial topic would be welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is... I think there was a comment on last week's pod, like, you better be good if you're sporting a mullet like that.
I completely agree.
Yes.
It really makes you think, really makes you stop and consider things. Like, have I been watching lots of good players who have mullets and I've not noticed because they're good?
Yeah.
It's only the bad players that I've noticed. Yeah, fair point, well made.
And there were a fair few. I did like the tripartite mullet midfield for the Kiwis.
Oh.
Because Rico Ioane had a bit of one.
Yep.
Quinn Tupai had one. Yep. And then David Havili comes off the bench with one as well.
Something goes on there, doesn't it? Something good.
I mean, I could sort of see it might be... I mean, Mark mentioned performance... Sorry, not Mark. That was his surname, wasn't it? It was Nick. Sorry, Nick mentioned the performance related. I can actually see when Rico Ioane streaked away for his try. It might be performance related in as much as it's aerodynamic.
Yes.
Yes, mullet. True.
Yeah. What's the name of the... He's not been playing on this tour. I presume he's injured. Crusaders 12/13. Blonde mullet.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jack Goodhue.
Yes, Goodhue. Goodhue, yes. So maybe because he got so many starts with the mullet that anyone vying for those midfield berths just thinks, mullet, and I'm in. Yeah, which has been proved by this game.
But Ryan Crossy was always kind of very clean-shaven and neat.
Very
New Zealand side was. I think it's Richie McCaw and Kieran Reid. They're not going to allow this to go, are they?
No, and they shouldn't. Especially if you're losing.
Do
what you want when you're winning, is Nick's point.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Couldn't agree more.
So, I can't work out. It seems very un-New Zealand to sack a coach midway between World Cup cycles. They don't do it.
And they shouldn't.
I was going to say, should they, would they, will they?
I don't think they will. Should they is another matter. Now, obviously, there were questions over Fozzie being appointed initially because you're just kind of... You've got this continuation of the Graham Henry and then...
Hansen.
Steve Hansen. Yeah, that lineage. It's the continuation, which means, at least to a degree, you've not got the fresh influx of ideas and doing things differently. And one of the beautiful things about rugby is that there are many, many ways to play the game. It's a constantly evolving game. And if you are not at the forefront of that, and if you're not bringing in fresh ideas, then arguably you're going backwards.
I'm mixed on this, right? So I'm starting to come to the conclusion that coaching isn't nearly as important as people think. You know, so if you have a group of the best players in the world, probably the stability within the organisation is just as important. And, you know, as long as they're getting to semis, it doesn't matter that much. I know everyone says they want to win, but only one team can win. The Italian Serie A teams found this out when seven of them all planned to win Serie A at the same time and all went bankrupt. Right? Only one can win. So as long as you're getting to the semi-finals, I think, generally speaking, you just keep it as it is. And How remarkable is it when you think back to have one continual line of coaches which have not been fired, all the way from Graham Henry to Foster, and between them, they've actually been knocked out of World Cups when they weren't supposed to, and they stuck with them. So
yeah, I don't think they will do, but I think more new ideas is not. It shouldn't just be ideas for the sake of ideas.
Yeah,
but I think bringing new perspective often helps.
Well, Ireland had an idea today which made me turn off the TV. Team breathing. And I was like, right, enough of this, it's going off.
Unity breathing.
Unity breathing, goodbye.
So after tries, you get in a circle, you do collective breathing.
Yeah, just like we did before the podcast.
Yeah.
All gathered in.
Well, I'm going to shatter your heart into 1,000 tiny pieces.
Go on.
Last night, France did it as well.
No!
Yes.
No! Someone said to me, it'd be different if France did it. Yeah, of course
they did. I noticed it because I was on TalkSport and we had Heather Fisher, England and Team GB player. And I said, Heather, I noticed them doing this breathing thing. Is that common? Do you do it? Oh, yeah, we used to do it all the time in sevens.
It
brings the cortisol levels down, and it's a sports psychology centering technique.
No,
there's a lot of buzzwords you'll love.
No,
there.
Yeah. The answer's no.
So France do it and Ireland do it. Well, the two teams that beat New Zealand.
Yeah, well,
do it. Wow.
I'm not saying correlation equals causation, but I'm going to start doing it.
Yeah, Save Your World have got something to do with it. Yeah. Save Your World have.
Save Your World must be making money hand over fist.
Just from our shout-outs. Yeah. Go sign up Save Your World today. Go on. Go and sign up and then call us. See what it, you know, give us all the inside goss.
Save Your World had a breathing technique, but it was the... wasn't it? That one, the Sippers and James O'Connor did. So
there's some personal trainers out there, and there's one actually that I know fairly well. A lovely bloke. But the stuff he puts on Instagram is so bizarre. I watched him the other day. Get this. Seven ways to... It's like, how to touch yourself. So, like, love taps on your shoulders. Like, what are you... Just lift your weights. What are you doing? They're so bizarre. Yeah, I'm not
into that. Yeah, there's so much pseudoscience in that environment.
Pro science.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about... I won't tell you the full story. There was a story about a Premiership prop. I won't tell you which club. You're free to guess. I might have mentioned it on one of the other podcasts. Who absolutely lost his mind doing yoga, allegedly. Like, why are we doing yoga? Why are we doing this? I can just...
Ivy and Lewis Roberts.
Yeah. It's recent. It's this season. So, yeah, I just don't get it. If you're not practicing lineups, what are you doing? You can't be practicing breathing, surely.
Breathing is... I mean, if you've got everything else nailed and you still have hours in the day, if you're every single set piece move, if your cardiovascular work is absolutely impeccable,
you're Steve Redgrave at this point,
your strength, yeah, but you can also lift 500 kilo, you can set a new deadlift world record,
exactly,
every man in the squad, then you can there might be some merit in focusing
on the
breathing.
Here's the nutty bit about it, right? You said before rugby, new ideas, blah, blah, blah. And I said coaching's not important. It is important, but one of the things about rugby, it's not what you coach, it's what you decide not to coach, because there's so many ways to play the game, you can't do everything. You literally have to exclude bits of the game, and that's what gives teams their identity. So because of that, there is no excuse to be doing breathing techniques, because you'll never complete rugby. There's always more rugby to be done.
Yeah, and even if you think you've completed it playing one way, you will then come up against your nemesis who plays it a totally different way and will just absolutely batter you.
Exactly.
So, speaking of things that have been excluded from a coaching perspective, South Africa bombed two tries where their forwards broke through and couldn't pass. Do you think that is Etzebeth and Sia Khaleesi bombed two tries?
There you go.
Well, let's move on to this, because what a game this was as well.
This is one for the history books, right? It was awesome.
It was an incredible game, and the way that the momentum swung from the first half where England scored those two great tries, the Tuilagi and the Stewart try in the first 20 minutes, and they looked great, to then England starting to get a little bit tired, South Africa bring on the bomb squad early in the second half, and then
I hate that phrase. Can we not use it? I just hate it.
It doesn't really make sense. If it was, they bring on players to do a high kick and chase, then I go, that's the bomb squad. They're catch specialists. But
what's the history behind it?
I can't remember. Some tenuous.
It was all this when it was finishers and what were the other words?
They were defusing the situation.
Game changers,
finishers, all of that. It was that basically. Yeah.
But they brought on
more non-rugby stuff.
They brought on their massive front row replacements.
Did you see them in the warm up beforehand when they're the front row A up doing live scrummaging against front row B? Just almost just to sort of flex in front of the opposition, going, look at us.
I tell you what,
terrifying.
They came close, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
they should have won this game.
Yeah, they should have won the game.
I have never seen an England set piece be taken apart like on the weekend.
And for that, from about 45 minutes in, when those. Their three enormous replacements came on, front row replacements came on, to, well, basically for almost the whole of the rest of the game, England were just being crucified, and they were being crucified. The line-out was not functioning. Their scrum was getting bullied.
Yep.
They're getting bullied in contact. They were therefore getting bullied at the jackal, at the breakdown. It was all South Africa. And I cannot believe that England found a way to win in those circumstances.
Well, it poses an interesting question. So Matt Proudfoot is the scrum coach now. And I don't think that England's scrum has been as dominant as it has in the past. And I don't know whether he was just very good for South Africa because, well...
They're enormous South African.
I'm pretty
look
sure.
at the depth of those players.
Do you think South Africa would scrummage significantly worse if I became a South Africa scrum coach tomorrow? Probably not.
I reckon...
Even though you became the South Africa scrum coach tomorrow.
Yeah, no... I don't think it would. They're not going to get any worse.
Yeah,
you do that coaching technique where you go, "So Ox, what do you think?" I agree.
Yeah.
Stephen,
say that again, Ox. We're doing that today.
Have you ever read about your inner tennis coach?
No.
which is a book, written
by Eddie Jones.
Basically, doing exactly that.
It's
saying like, how do you feel? The argument is kind of making is that even if you have no idea about tennis or something else, you can coach it by asking the right questions, provided you're with a sufficiently experienced player. So I would just go asking lots of questions to
exactly right
Bongi and Ox and Kitsoff and Malcolm Marks and Vincent Cock.
I was about to say that, Marcus. I completely agree. Yeah.
Malcolm, do what Malcolm says.
Yeah.
So, bearing in mind, Matt Proudfoot did do the Springboks, and I don't think the England scrum is going that well. I thought the section of Bevan Rodd was almost suicidal, actually. Because he's not a huge man. He's not a dominant scrummager. I've seen what happened when he wasn't emotional enough against, or was too emotional against La Rochelle.
There was an imbalance of emotion.
Yeah, yeah, which is why he lost scrummaging at La Rochelle, all emotion, allegedly. So it saw all that. But then, if you know you're not going to be able to match the Springboks, why bother trying at all? So they won some quick ball, which they did. Bevan Rodd's a hell of a player around the park.
Yeah.
So actually...
Good engine on the boy.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to move away from that completely. You go hard on things which you might win at and sacrifice things which you think you're going to be absolutely battered at anyway.
Well, but he did well. The scrum penalty started in the second half.
Yeah.
And he got taken off shortly after the three enormous South African front row replacements came on.
On about 16
Marla
minutes.
Got pumped, which was really unusual.
And I wonder if that is because Marla is one of those guys who likes to take people on.
Mm.
Yeah, and you know, you're going head on head with those boys, it's going to be a hard day.
Work smarter, not harder against South Africa. Yeah.
So if you look at the scrum on 60 minutes and Bevan Rodd's playing and they get absolutely annihilated. Now, he brings a lot more around the park than almost every other loose head since Mako, probably. He was immense around the park.
Yeah. I mean, it is worth noting that prior to this week, Bevan Rodd was, fifth choice loose head for England?
Yeah.
With Genge, Marla, Mako, and then, sadly injured, Benno Abano, who was in the summer tour squad ahead of...
Potentially Saracens-bound Benno Abano.
Is he
really?
Yeah. Wonder why he wants to leave Bath. It's weird.
He's related to Marrow as well, isn't he?
Yeah, cousin.
It's his cousin.
Yeah.
Oh, and do you know the little rumour I told you about last week? Jonathan Kapoku going to Lyon?
Or Joel.
Is it Jonathan or Joel? Which one moved? Doesn't matter.
One of the boys.
I told you it was happening. Happened this week.
There you go.
Nice.
That would make sense. And actually, he is one of those props I can see being a legitimate challenge to someone like the Springbok scrum because he's absolutely enormous and very, very strong.
Who's that?
Benno Abano.
Benno Abano. Yeah. Although, low centre of gravity.
Yes.
He's a big strong boy. He is... relatively short for an international front row.
But England went for it. They had a crack. I mean, again, they played some territory. They played smart. South Africa, like you say, probably should have won. England, I mean, I totally agree with the comment that England showed loads of heart and managed to find a way to win. But there seemed to be almost a slight... While I was reading the papers today, there seemed to be almost a real desire to put it on that. Like, there was one article that I read where it said, England used heart to win. You can't coach the stuff that... seemed to be like people wanted to take it away from Eddie. Like, oh, he had nothing to do with this. We still hate him. He had nothing to do with
it. Yeah, they really... I mean, I'm not a huge Jones fan. Actually, in a way, I am a huge Jones fan because I want to sack him. And that's exactly what he would do. Well, that's exactly what he does to all his coaches. I believe that he's on something where he just continually turns over all his coaches for fresh ideas. The problem is, at some point, someone's going to notice that and then want to replace you. I would have got rid of him last year when it was free to do so. Just because, you know, I think change is okay. I wonder if those journalists are on something, because I was looking at that England team and I thought it is rather like a big bang, all of these fresh faces in one go. He revolutionises his team pretty much overnight. Should it have been a more subtle process? I think it probably should have, actually.
Revolutionise? I think that might be over the top, that.
Raffy, Mark
Raffy
Smith,
off the bench.
Yeah, Raffy for 10 minutes
Stewart,
off the bench.
Raffy Dolly.
Broughton Park's so Raffy Dolly, Quirk.
Dolly's injury induced.
Yeah.
Cowan Dickey and Jamie George.
Blamire.
Bevan Rod, Blamire.
Blamire's third choice.
Would have been on the bench.
Bevan Rod, injury induced.
Yeah, but he's put him in the squad, and he could have gone back on that, because there are other players that he could bring in.
The only players that are in the shirt they would have been in if everybody was fit is Marcus Smith and Freddie Stewart.
Otherwise,
it would have been total continuity.
Which isn't revolution, but it nevertheless...
It wasn't revolution by design.
No.
But he has embraced the opportunity to have a revolution.
And even those two names I mentioned, Marcus Smith and Freddie Stewart, make a huge difference. And
yes.
It's the same thing. We talk about the scrum and the psychological edge that gives any team. When you're getting pumped, it makes you scared to make mistakes and stuff. So that will have undoubtedly had an effect. Equally, the psychological effect of knowing that when a team, especially a team like South Africa, kicks the ball, fine, Freddie's back there.
Albeit, when the pressure came on him, he had a couple of fumbles in the last 10 minutes. Overall, not the one that should have been a penalty, where there was a penalty immediately afterwards, the final kick of the game, but there was two others where he did fumble. Besides that, I thought he was flawless.
Yeah, I think he's excellent.
He was superb.
And I just love the fact that Eddie has actually gone with all these lads. I'm so glad that he hasn't turned back time, bought in a Vunipola or... you know, whoever else it may be, because there are people available to him. He could have gone back for Ford.
He could have gone back for Ford. The rumor was that Vunipola was in France and unavailable.
I wonder what he's doing there.
Didn't make himself available for this. But so one of the things that really impressed me about England was the way, obviously, they scored the tries through some amazing back play, and it was amazing back play that was designed around making the South Africa think that Marcus Smith was the target and letting Henry Slade be the target of the
boy.
Ball player.
He's been maligned, actually, by a lot of people.
Henry Slade.
There's a lot of people been getting on him.
What, recently or historically?
Yeah, the last few weeks.
I've not read that, but I'm of the opinion that he was meant to be an England great, and he's not hit those heights yet. And I wouldn't, you know, some of that was because of his positional stuff. I thought he had a great game, though.
He was awesome.
He had a great game. And the way that I thought it was very, very smart attack play from England to use him. Basically, Marcus Smith was the decoy to give Henry Slade the opportunity to play ball. And for both the Max Mallins break down the right wing.
That was ace.
For the what led to the Tuilagi try. And I think it was the Quirk try.
Yep.
Was all by having Marcus Smith as the decoy runner to allow Slade to play ball.
Yeah, so
and bearing in mind, that was certainly a change-up play, because ordinarily you would have Slade, Marcus and Tuilagi. So you'd have two decoys, Marcus and Tuilagi. And to do it in that way and disrupt what is, well, probably the most settled and the most defensively consistent three-quarters line in international world rugby was very, very smart and very impressive.
Now, you've got one answer for this. You've got World Cup final tomorrow, and you're not allowed to change your options. England are in it. Slade and Marcus, or Ford and Farrell? Those are your only options.
Who is the third man with those?
Whoever you want.
So can I have... Slade, Marcus and Fals?
No. those two or those two?
If well, so let's just say with Tuilagi.
Yeah, Tuilagi's your third man. Tuilagi's fit as your third man.
Let's just say if you
because that gives consistency.
I'd go Slade and Slade and Marcus. I love Slade that much. Yeah, I'll go Slade and Marcus. I love Henry Slade.
Come on, Phil. Pressure's on.
Fucking hell, that is a hard decision.
He's a left foot. Excuse me. He's a left foot. Yeah, that's very unlike you, Phil.
It's a very, very hard decision. Give me Magic Marcus.
To play a World Cup final tomorrow over the England captain. Oof.
That's only because that contrived situation you gave me.
Yeah. I would have Slade, Marcus and Faz.
Okay.
Yeah,
so would I.
How, by putting him at 13?
No. By putting Slade at 13.
Sorry, him being Slade. So just on that though, isn't the idea that having different skill sets allows Slade to be so good? So he either had the very fast option of, I can't remember his name now.
Marchant,
thank you. Or he had the power of Tuilagi. When you throw Farrell in there, does that have the same dynamic?
Well, in exactly the way Phil just mentioned, that when England had the most fruitful moments in attack, it was when Marcus Smith created space for Henry Slade. Last week, it was Owen Farrell creating space for Marcus Smith to be the decision maker.
Yes, yeah. And last week when they played Tuilagi on the wing, as basically that roaming option, gave him a lot more freedom because he wasn't expected to drop deep for kicks. You had Faz doing it at times, Slade doing it at times. So it gave him free reign to pop up wherever he wants, which is also, I mean, it wasn't the best game last week, but that is unnerving for a defence to basically always have to know where Manu Tuilagi is, and he can pop up anywhere, in any position and at any time.
It is still very annoying for England that we talk about Slade, Ford, Marcus, Farrell. You talk about all those boys, but the straw that stirs the drink is still Manu.
Although he went off early, and England still managed to find a way to win.
Well, after he scored the try to win the game,
yeah. But nonetheless,
you don't have his try, you don't win.
When a lot of people saw Tuilagi going off injured and Joe Marchant coming on, people would have been thinking, "Oh,
no, Joe Marchant was on."
Oh, sorry, Joe Marchant was on. Max Malins coming on. How's this going to work?
Max Malins was great.
He was great.
He's such a good player.
He really is, isn't he?
He's such a classy player. That take where the little chip over the top and he reads it, predicts the bounce perfectly, hits it at full pace, and then kicks for the corner.
He is England's awesome version of Patronaud in France. Pernod. Completely different players.
Very, very different players.
But they seem to do no wrong. Yeah. So everything they do seems just to work. And that's what he's very good at. He just seems to pop up at the right time, make the right decisions, do something a bit flashy. He's
pretty good. He is awesome. I think I said it earlier in the season when his form was so good for Saracens that I'd want him starting. But then I don't know who I'd be dropping to make him start because there are some serious options right across the team.
He's such a complete player, and I think, you know, he's like a very fast Henry Slade.
Yeah,
I think that's probably a good way to put him because he can play 10, he can play fullback.
Distribution's great, his kicking is great.
I assume if you play 10 and fullback and wing, you can probably play 13 and 12
basically,
presumably.
Yeah.
Just a great footballer.
Yeah,
yeah, it's brilliant.
Quality.
Just on the a couple of things I noticed with the broadcasting on the telly, go. Brian Habana. Obviously, the
Are you going to explain this to me?
No, one second. The Northern Hemisphere is obviously rubbing off on Brian over the autumn series because he referred to Joe Marchant as if he was French, Joe Marchand, which I like, and Jesse Creel as if he was Scottish, Jesse McCreel.
Oh, right.
which I really like.
There might be an in-joke there.
I don't know. Well, I think it was an accident. But anyway, what were you going to say? Explain this to me.
Yeah, okay. So I was listening to him. I had to listen to him again because one of the things he said just baffled me. He said that South Africa were running a washing machine defence.
Oh, yeah, he did say
that. What on earth does that mean? So I was waiting for the analogy to unveil itself, and it didn't.
What do we think he meant?
I can't even begin to imagine what a washing machine defence does. It seems to do with the outside coming up quick. Does your washing machine do that?
I don't know. It's got a rinse cycle.
Yeah. It's a washing machine, not dishwasher. So it's a very precise analogy. I was sitting there thinking, I cannot work this out for the life of me.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And the one other thing on TalkSport as well, I couldn't get the audio because you can't do listen again to match commentaries, unfortunately. But Andrew McKenna, when Rafi Quirk scored his try.
Is he going to jail?
He said, Andrew McKenna, Twickenham is literally bouncing.
Jail.
I mean, Phil, you're in construction. Oh. How masterful an achievement is that for the engineers of Twickenham Stadium?
So when Bridgewater Hall in Manchester was built, it was built on springs to stop the vibration running through the structure of the building, to basically dampen the reverberation and feedback of the sound. Now, as far as I'm aware, that hasn't been done at Twickenham, but if it were done, it would be an incredible feat of engineering. It'd be unnecessary because it's open roof as well. But it's technically possible, but highly unlikely.
It might be why the East Stand was so over budget.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I've got a question for you, right? And this might be your way to the top of Lango Rocknell, so feel free to bank it. What about stadiums where you have an inbuilt slight vibration for when you score? So it feels like it's really rocking. But it is literally rocking.
Like the Rumble Pack for the N64.
Exactly like that.
For a stadium.
Oh, I love that. So
just a little, like a low rumble.
And now you're talking.
You can only really turn it on, I think, when it's a packed house. It'd be a bit silly if you started rumbling it, you know, at Worcester when they've got five guys there, but I think that'd be a cool feature.
That's a great feature.
You link it, and, yeah, you know,
Rumble Pack
small,
Stadium.
You could link it up to the lights. You could link it up to the sound systems that rumbled with the noise.
Yeah.
So when at Welford Road, where just when Leicester come out and they play their what song is that? Smoke on the Water.
Yeah,
they play Smoke on the Water in the Crumbly Stand. Everyone does the stomping.
Yeah.
And you do get, because it's an old wooden, you do get that kind of feel. It's great.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Can you make that happen?
I mean, I guess I can propose it.
Shall I email Dummies?
Dummies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you might as well.
I'll get it done.
Just get on the phone to Mr. Lang and Mr. O'Rourke.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Or Mrs. Ray.
Mr. O'Rourke.
As Phil calls him, just Ray.
Ray.
Excellent.
There we
good.
Revolutionised stadiums today.
Now, we have spoken about England quite a bit. South Africa should have won this game. South Africa.
Andre Pollard missed those kicks.
He misses two kicks.
See Vanessa Sabeth and Sia Khaleesi, like you said.
Bombed two tries. They should have been scored. They should have scored. And my point is slightly flippant, but that pack is so amazing. But are they spending all of their time on set piece, destroying set piece, scrimmaging, jackling? When just a little bit, just one session of like two on ones once a week would have converted those two tries.
And does having such a powerful, potent weapon of a pack mean sometimes they just forget you've got
other things,
unbelievable gas out wide.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it's, well, yes. So the beautiful thing about Chas and Colby is he's sort of like an independent attacking weapon. You know, you don't need to worry too much about it. He's going to do what he does. So you can do all your hard, horrible stuff knowing you've got this independent attacking weapon outside. He sort of does a lot of that. So when he's not playing, they actually instantly lose a bit of a cutting edge.
Yeah, but, because he can just go from anywhere at any time.
Yeah, and like, so for Leicester Tigers, and we'll talk about him later, like George Ford, you don't really need to do too much attacking work because, you know, Joe Ford's going to be running the show, or Danny Cipriani will be running the show, or something like that. So I think there's an element of that. I also think South Africa suffered from what Wales used to do, but sort of the reverse, which is Wales used to stay in the fight and then hopefully try and snatch it at the end. And if you play very tight rugby, occasionally it'll get snatched from you at the end. And that's what they did. You know, they were looking for the points. They were kicking well, mauling, slowing it down, beating people up. It doesn't lend itself to scoring a lot of points, but it is a slow, grinding effort.
And it's a slow, grinding effort that the past 2 weeks has seen them win close games by suffocating the other team, and they were so close to doing it. And it's fine margins.
If
Pollard kicks one of those two kicks, or they finish one of those two tries, they win this game, and they actually would in the end win it comfortably.
I can't understand the mindset of watching that game or Springboks. I know sometimes Springboks do produce boring games, but like how that is not celebrated just as much as the All Blacks, because that spectacle at Twickenham was as good as anything because of the styles.
Yeah, it made for an incredible, and then you've got the history that sits behind it as well.
Yeah,
and obviously of the last four games that they played, England have now won three, but England lost the only one that actually counts.
Yeah, it's true. That's very, very true. And it's quite interesting in the build-up to the game as well. Eddie Jones, you know, just lost his mind a little bit. You know, backing his pack, saying, you know, we're not a weak pack. There's going to be 82,000.
Sir Khaleesi was asked about this. Eddie Jones said, they think we're weak. And then they said to Sir Khaleesi, so Eddie Jones said, you think they're weak. And Sir Khaleesi said, I literally don't know where Eddie's got that from.
Really?
And he literally meant it.
Oh, wow.
So he said that nobody has said anything which suggests that, so I think this is mind game.
It'd be so much better if Sir Khaleesi said, yeah, we think they are.
But C is too nice. If they've got Malcolm Marks or Kitsoff, maybe.
What's more disrespectful? Saying your team is weak, or saying the opposition team is weak, or lying about the opposition team? Like, which one is it?
got a message here from Alex Albertin. Nice one, Alex. Contact airchasers at gmail.com. He says he's a South Africa fan, has zero complaints about the result, and in fact, what a game. Completely agree with that, Alex, and well done for taking it so well. Mm-hmm. He says, I was wondering your guys' thoughts on the competing in the air versus tackling in the air. As, for example, both Khaleesi and Marchand went up for the ball, and it seems that the only difference is that Marchand jumped higher. So my question is, what's the coaching point? Using your language,
stay
back
on the ground.
E.g., what should Khaleesi or anyone in that situation do differently?
And Etzebeth had one as well, which I thought was really unfair. Last penalty of the game was really unfair.
I thought that was okay, the last penalty, because he didn't actually give it for the challenge in the air. I think he gave it for going off the feet of the subsequent ruck.
Correct.
And then they went. Oh, did they not look back at it and give the penalty? That was the first penalty, and it goes on the big screen. And Etzebeth's like, why are we bothering doing this?
They got a second penalty.
And it's second penalty.
And they chose, you want that one or that one? And they chose the one in front of the sticks.
So we would have been penalised regardless. But,
It comes back to something that happened 3 weeks ago. And the Khaleesi decision, which I don't particularly like, actually, was at least consistent with the Tonga. It was, I want to say it was Walter Fifita, but I think it was actually the other winger, on Johnny May. Mm. Where Johnny May, they both get off the ground. They both would have been in a realistic position to catch the ball if Johnny May, and in this case Marchand, weren't the opposition, who just happened to have the ability to jump significantly higher. So there's a relativity aspect that makes it unfair.
Yeah, and I don't like he wasn't in a realistic position to catch the ball. It's like,
he's a professional rugby player, he knows the positions to be in.
And had the other player not been 6 inches higher, he would have caught the ball.
Yeah, it's completely realistic. I hate that wording.
It means you've got to know exactly who you're... The implication of it means you've got to know exactly who you're jumping against. And if you can jump higher than them, you can go up. If you can't jump higher than them, you've got to go...
You've got to make that decision in an international rugby game in milliseconds.
Yes, and that it just seems an unfair standard to put on a player. I know these are highly trained, very perceptive rugby players at the peak of their powers, but this just feels like it is too much. Because that's Sia Khaleesi, if it was, and I made this point the other week, if it was Will Stewart was the opposite man, Sia Khaleesi is in the air higher than Will Stewart would have been in the air.
Yeah.
So Will Stewart would have taken Sia Khaleesi out. So there's this relativity aspect of it that just seems unfair. So I think Khaleesi was hard done by there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But what was the penalty count about? 20
for England, yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen a team managed to grind it out.
Amazing they did with that. Thinking it through. Now we've broken it down a bit.
Giving that many penalties.
But again, it was a number of things went England's way. The Andre Pollard missing his kicks.
Those two bomb
two
tries.
Two bomb tries. And that's the two, that's
the two early tries as well.
Yeah.
The two early tries before getting points on the board before South Africa's dominance, physical dominance came into play.
Yeah,
that,
you're right.
That did make a real difference.
It's quite unlike South Africa to, and fair play to England for being clinical, two attacks, two tries.
Mm. And the Raffy try.
Oh, and Broughton Park's Raffy quirk. Do you know, Saul Quirk, dad of Raffy, was watching a game at Broughton Park today.
And listens to the podcast as well.
Does he? Mm-hmm. Oh, good man.
And follows the podcast, actually.
Because, good lad. Because he was obviously at Twickenham on what day, but his Raffy's sister was playing, I think, under-18s game.
Amazing. So awesome.
Back in Manchester, so, yeah.
Excellent stuff.
Hopefully a slightly sore head this morning.
And Raffy Quirk did get mentioned in the little team huddle before the Broughton Park under-14s went out for their big games. Like, Raffy did the business yesterday at Twickenham. You go out and do the club proud today. And they did, against Mark Atkinson's and Phil's Sedgley Park Tigers.
Whoa. Disgraceful.
25-10.
I've just read a tweet. Nothing to do with rugby at all. That I just sort of threw out there.
To do with breathing?
No. To do with how you spend your life, right? So... What do you think in total the activity is that you spend the most time doing?
Sleeping.
Correct.
Yes.
Second to that?
Working.
Yes. So 26 years sleeping, 13 years working. Is that it? Mind you, complete years.
Yeah, yeah. So 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for.
So if you double 13. Years. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Years.
Next one, podcasting.
Podcasting, yes. 12 years of podcasting.
Sometimes it feels like it.
Number three is 7 years trying to fall asleep. How annoying is that? I identify with that so strongly.
Do you?
Oh, God, I can't sleep for... I never can sleep.
I'm asleep, normally asleep within minutes of getting into bed.
Did you listen to that?
Often.
If you could get incredible. Through... you had to get through an hour of listening to two guys talking about hunting, but there was a Joe Rogan podcast with a guy who's a longevity scientist.
So yeah.
And it was fascinating listening to that.
I found all that stuff interesting.
It was really, really interesting.
Is that a recent one?
Yeah, Peter Attia. And, he was... He was talking about the importance, just the physical effect of sleep and...
There was a recent... I've listened to both Sam Harris on sleep and also Ross Tucker, Science of Sport podcast. He's done a couple on sleep. Really interesting.
Bodybuilders swear by it.
Sleep.
Swear by it, yeah.
Recovery.
Yeah, it's when they build their muscle.
Yeah.
So they've got to get to bed. They've got to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Recovery. It's actually one of the things that I probably wasn't as good at when I was playing rugby was recovery. Mm. I think I overtrained and under-recovered quite a bit.
It wouldn't surprise me. But mind you, when you're young, you can do that.
You can, but it also led to loads of injuries for me.
There is that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, falling asleep. Those are like bro science. But I do think there's something about people who can sleep really quickly, just get off, and then being more successful. Because it's, you know... Spend hours, years, not sleeping.
We talked the other week about Mark Wahlberg's schedule.
Yeah.
Getting up at 2:30 a.m. and he's in bed by 7:30. Or something ridiculous.
What a stupid schedule. I've never said it before. It's so stupid. Anyway.
Yeah. Incredible game. Well played, England. And
what a game.
Yeah. I mean, South Africa can console themselves by just looking back at the World Cup final. And
100%.
I'd rather have had that one.
Now, we will talk in length... about Razzy Erasmus in length on the next
on the other podcast because we
next
want this
podcast
because let's just stay as positive as we can. And that was one of the things I actually said when I was on TalkSport last night covering the France New Zealand game. We got to the end, and the commentator mentioned Razzy Erasmus. I went, do you know, I've been listening all day, nobody's mentioned Razzy Erasmus.
Probably,
and that says everything about the rugby.
Yes, 100%. But so we'll mention him in length in the next podcast. But did you see his tweet?
No.
Yesterday.
Oh, with the Guinness.
Well, not a Guinness, but it's 8 seconds long. It is just him. It says, well done, England, and drinking. What is probably... No, it's not a Negroni, you can tell from the quote. It looks like a whiskey and soda, something like that.
Yeah.
That's it. Eight seconds long. Before, massive South African
game,
flag.
He said, before the game, it was a picture of a Guinness, and he said, I think these 2 months might go by quite quickly. There you go.
Yeah. Is he on full pay? Oh, we'll talk about it later. Right. Yeah, talking of like Guinness, when Talk H won this week, so I was forced into playing on the wing this week. So last week, tight prop, this week, wing. It doesn't matter.
No big deal.
No big deal.
Get you a man who can do both.
Exactly right. So in the front row, I always bring front row beers, the most disgusting ales that I can find for the boys, because we've just done a disgusting job, so now we're going to enjoy disgusting beers together.
Nice.
It brings us closer. And we have to find the and then we take it in turns buying the worst beers.
Love it.
And you have to have them. It's not negotiable. Because I was in the back three, I bought my cocktail set, and we had back three Belvedere's.
Belvedere.
Basically, it's a whiskey Negroni, and it was awesome.
Ah, someone has told me about a whiskey Negroni in the past.
Yep. Bought my own garnish. My little orange skin, bought my crystal glasses.
Can we just take stock as well? Because the whole Negroni thing, It's definitely us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely us.
100%. It was a cocktail for a long time, but I never, ever heard it mentioned.
Yeah, we bought it back.
We went big on Negronis, and slowly, over the years afterwards, it has just become a staple.
Yeah, just absolutely gone wild.
Yeah.
It shows the impact that we have on the popular culture.
100%.
It's true. What I quite liked about that is when some people in the rugby sphere that maybe don't align with our views took to Twitter to say Negronis are
they're disgusting.
What people are just toxic masculinity gone wild. To pretend you like a Negroni
in a glass. Toxic masculinity in the that's my cocktail.
Yes,
toxic masculinity. I think the reason I hate this so much is because I do so much in rugby. I think that's it.
Not a Belvedere. It's a I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but Boulevardier.
Boulevardier, that's the one, sorry.
Which is effectively a cross between a Manhattan and a Negroni.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Manhattan's awesome. I do love
it. So it's different ratios, interestingly. Two parts American whiskey with one part each of sweet vermouth and Campari.
Yeah.
Whereas a Negroni is, of course, equal parts.
Yeah.
Sweet red vermouth, Campari and gin.
When I went to New York with the missus years ago, we happened... in the little package we got with Virgin Holidays or whatever, we stayed in the Roosevelt Hotel, which is where, in Mad Men, Don Draper goes to drink his Manhattans.
Awesome.
So I took great pleasure sitting at that same bar ordering a Manhattan.
Love it.
Nice.
Well, I've got some Woodford Reserve for my Boulevard. Say again?
Boulevardier?
Boulevardier.
Boulevardier.
So it's Boule, B-O-U-L-E, and then all one word, V-A-R-D-I-E-R.
So in the next changeover... in the change from this podcast to the next podcast, I'll go and get the Woodford Reserve out. Perfect.
Oh, incredible.
Right.
So,
okay.
Speaking of drinking cocktails where they're intended to be drunk, I drank a Singapore Sling Raffles, which is in Singapore, the historic, I think it was a beach house originally, but absolutely magnificent, old colonial style Victorian era hotel. Nice. In the centre of Singapore.
So, wonderful. On the other podcast as well, when you do that, we got some emails about drinks that people have created.
Yes.
We'll do that there as well.
Because one's come in from Rudgley Rugby Club as well.
Nice.
Which is now going to be referred to as a Rudgley.
Rudgley.
Like it. So to the Principality then, I guess.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, let's start, because we've just finished with the question about the tackle in the air. Let's just talk about that moment with Nick Tompkins' try, which just... such a strange moment.
Play
to the whistle.
Yeah. And a world-class piece of officiating. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
There's many times where tries have been spoiled incorrectly by the referee blowing up prematurely.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first thing, because I thought, as Nick Tompkins was running in, I thought, fair play, ref, because at the very least, he's given himself both options.
Yes.
Yeah.
But as it turned out, you're completely right, JB, it was world-class officiating.
It's like, what a spot that is, because just the fact that the player's arm is out, to me, that looks like a yellow card.
If that had happened in a lower league, Tock H against Oldham,
Curly Beale.
You'd be livid if the ref had let that go.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes before Kirtley Beale is in the bin for a similar offence.
Yeah.
So you could very easily see, well, just it's almost identical to something I've seen 10 minutes ago, which was a yellow card. Therefore, this is a yellow card.
And guess what? It is literally almost identical.
It is literally almost identical.
Yeah. It's so close.
It feels like it's against the spirit of the game, yeah, in a way. It feels like it shouldn't be allowed, but, you know, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't knocked forward. That is the clear delineator between a knock-on and not a knock-on.
I almost felt sick thinking about the Australian fans watching that, because natural law and justice suggest that should be a yellow card. Like, you just see it, you're like, yellow card.
Yeah, yeah.
But the horror
he's
of gotta watching,
go.
Yeah.
And then you realise, oh, it's not gone forward.
Oh, God. Oh, God, it's gone backwards.
Yeah. But we saw it last week where Will Jordan stopped playing when he thought there was a knock-on that wasn't.
Yeah.
That should have actually been a try, or certainly a significant break to Ireland because of the way they handled it. Australia did the same thing. They just stopped. You can never stop in a game like that. It's ludicrous. It's such a schoolboy error at that standard.
Yeah, agreed. And Dave Rennie was not happy with the officiating to the extent that he came out and said as much. He said he had no complaints about the red card, by the way.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. No, that's good.
But he said he was very, very unhappy with the officiating. And I think one of the things they think they got wrong was that moment. But Dave Rennie's wrong if he thinks that.
Yeah,
I do understand the frustration because he's just hoping it gets blown up straight away. But once it's gone and you've got to go to the screen, it turns out you've got to make the right decision according to the law book.
Yeah,
so unlucky.
Yeah, and ultimately a good win for Wales, but Australia again could have won this game if it's not for that last minute penalty, the Priestland penalty. In Australia, they played most of the game, 65 minutes with, well, they played 10 minutes with 13 men and 65 minutes with 14 men.
What is it about Wales at the minute? It's like their man of the match in any given game is the red card for the last year.
I know this is not exactly the best take on things, but they're a very lucky team. This is the luckiest team I've ever seen. They fluked their way to a Grand Slam. How do you do that?
Well, the jam slam.
Yeah, yes.
As people called it.
Completely. They're winning, and that's all that counts. That's all that counts. They're winning.
It is, yeah, yeah. You look back. I mean, they didn't win. You could argue they were unlucky to lose against South Africa, particularly because of that one moronic spectator who worked his way onto the pitch when Liam Williams is breaking down the left wing. It probably didn't change the game because the tide was already going away and I don't think Williams would have got in there, but you could argue they were unlucky in that, but they have been lucky a number of times.
I'm not even sure Wales do well, actually. I mean, they're quite well balanced, I think. They sort of do everything to an okay standard.
It wasn't a great autumn for them, but they've got a whole team's worth of players out injured.
Yeah, but so does everyone.
But one of the things you've all... Well, yes, I know. So I'm not saying that is... Don't judge it on its merits. What I'm saying is, one thing that everyone's always pointed out is that Wales have a real chronic issue with depth, except anyone in the back row where they've got more players than any international team. But in a lot of positions, Wales do not have depth, and they've been forced into a position where there's a lot of guys that Wayne Pivac can say, yeah, you can do a job at international level.
Well, you know, same as Scotland, aren't they? Maybe Ireland have got the depth now to sustain, you know, consistently world-class teams. Wales never had. But, you know, I think, in a way, it does help teams. You said this the other day about England's back row. If Scotland have three back rowers, they're really happy because that's the back row sorted, whereas England are continually chopping and changing because they've got so many options. It does work... It does work both ways, having a smaller player pool. Maybe Wales is maybe a touch too small.
Scotland is a bit too small as well.
Would you say Scotland's got a small... I mean, it has got a smaller player pool, objectively, than Wales, in terms of players and clubs and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Scotland, they definitely do. They do have the advantage of having players not... hating, they've got a union who don't hate the fact that players play outside of Scotland.
Yes, and that does help.
Yes, it does help. It helps to a degree. It also does hinder to a degree because Stuart Hogg, for example, will be playing for Exeter the week before he's captain in Scotland.
Yeah, do you know, like, can you work this out for the life of you? Rhys Priestland kicked the winning points, didn't he? He's 34 now. So he's good enough to play for Wales now. Well, he is, because he just played.
He won the game.
And he won the game. And then before that, he was playing for Wales, and then he has a little stint at Bath where they don't have him at all. How does that help the national team? If he was good enough before and good enough after, you've just removed an international 10 from your consideration. It's nuts.
And you've got now a 34-year-old taking the place of what could be a 21-year-old on the books.
Exactly. Exactly. I will never, ever know what this is about. I mean, I guess it's all about, you know, falsely making the unions competitive by, you know, taking money off your players. Falsely taking money off your players, making them accept rubbish contracts in the various regions. Whilst the Wales online clap like sea lions for them.
Market rate contracts.
Market rate contracts, of course.
Mm. There is... It's not all bad, because having your players available for the 2 weeks prior to international windows and them not playing, I don't know, Stuart Hogg not playing away at Saracens the week before you're going to then be facing South Africa.
I just think
is handy.
It's very handy, but is it not just...
It's not the...
It's so much commitment for, what, 3 games in the autumn in the Six Nations. That's it. Yeah, and you've got to model your whole club career around this. I don't think it's worth it. I think they're probably better off playing very competitive club rugby before they go into international camp rather than be continually rested all the time. That said, they are Six Nation champs and they have won a Grand Slam and they've just beaten Australia.
Having the flexibility to do it is useful. That's one thing you can say. With Ireland, they'll wrap Johnny Sexton, or have done over the years, wrap Johnny Sexton up in cotton wool, and the year he won World Player of the Year with awesome international performances. Yeah. 2018, was that? He played about seven games for Leinster.
Yeah. Basically plays
all the big games,
the knockout games,
and a couple of the interpros.
Adam Beard, Seb Davis, those sort of lads. I'd love to see them in the Prem, see what they can come up with. It'd be brilliant.
It'd be good for them as well.
It'd be awesome for them. But no, Wales no better.
What other games did we have this week? Ireland hammered Argentina.
Anything to say on Australia? Or I mean, Australia have now they've lost all their games.
God, they have, haven't they? Have they?
Yeah.
Did they not beat Scotland?
No, they lost to Scotland.
They lost to Scotland. Lost to England. Lost to Wales. They got like a reverse triple crown.
Well,
what would you call that?
Well done. I mean, goodness me, that's
Paisami though. I do like him.
Paisami and Ikitau look awesome. Those two. And Valentini, I know he didn't play. You know, he played the first 14 minutes before getting red card for head clash with Adam Beard, but he's looked awesome in this tour.
Yeah.
I guess it's the risk of a player like that who's so physical, who wants to smash everyone. You are occasionally going to catch someone in the head.
Nick White looks great as well.
Nick White looks great. They are.
Oh, he looks great and he plays well.
Amazing moustache.
Wing commander White.
I think they have missed Karevi and Quade Cooper in these games. Obviously, they beat the
World Player of the Year nominee, Samu Karevi.
Samu Karevi, five games. Five games outside of the top league in Japan.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And not a single South African.
Yes.
Amazing.
And that announcement came about 2 days before the Razzie verdict.
Yeah. It doesn't help itself.
I mean,
does it?
I think Sia Khaleesi definitely should have been one of the nominees.
Why him?
I think he's been awesome this year.
He's been good.
I think he's been...
In the Lions tour, he was great.
I think, actually, this is the best I've seen him play in terms of his physicality and his running game.
Ball carrying.
Ball carrying and running game, I think, has been the best I've ever seen of him this year.
I guess... Well, obviously, he's captain, so they must think he's pretty good. The 2 second rows are awesome, but actually, those 2 second rows are part of a quad of second rows who are awesome. And I guess it'd also be pretty hard to give it to the front row because they're all interchangeable with other awesome front rows.
Yeah, any one of the front rows, it'd be very difficult to single out any one of them.
If I was looking at that World Player of the Year shortlist, I would trade Karevi for Khaleesi.
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually, just thinking it through. Yeah, I think that's fair. I was trying to think, who was the other?
So the four...
Michael Hooper, Antoine Dupont, Maro Itoje.
Maro Itoje? I don't think he's been that good this year. Well, where's Courtney Laws?
Yeah,
well, where's Courtney Laws? Captain of England.
I kind of agree with that. If you were picking an England, player,
the captain of England
Big Courts has been better than Maro.
Starts three tests, got his way to the top job in England. Where is he? Who is doing this? Bring me their head.
I think I think Anton Dupont should get it.
Is it just
he
a...
Will. Yeah, he will.
He should do.
Is it just an award? I mean, of course it's just an award. But is it just an award to raise the profile among casual watchers of rugby?
I don't think so, historically.
It's a panel. It's like rugby writers and journalists.
That's why you should... Yeah, that's exactly why you need to listen to podcasts, particularly our podcast, and then you won't get nonsense like nonsense views like that.
There will be... I'm sure there will be some people that we know who have been on the panel voting, and, hey, everyone's entitled to an opinion. I think there's enough noise of the saying the sort of things we're saying to go, yeah, I really don't think they're in tune with what's actually happened.
Yeah, yeah. Completely.
The Karevi one just is bonkers.
I'm not even sure you can give any of the Saracens lads really World Player of the Year nomination. I mean, is it just for international performance?
Just for international rugby, yeah.
And do the Lions count?
Yeah,
they will
the international test matches.
Well, yeah, because you'd have to
It'd be hard to argue from Marrow, because if the Lions didn't count, because England weren't particularly good in the Six Nations, and he's only played three games in the autumn.
Who's the Irish nominee?
None.
Really? Hey, tell you what, judging today, though, Andrew Porter could have had a nomination if he plays like that, week in, week out.
Yeah, well, he was due to go to the Lions, but couldn't, obviously.
What a game he had. He was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, he's a freak.
Yeah. Did anyone watch that game today?
No.
Bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Legitimately turned it off when they did group breathing. I thought, they're not going to win. Argentina aren't going to win this. This looks ominous. Off it went.
As soon as it looked like it was one-sided, I'm not into it. We got spoilt yesterday by close games going down to the wire. And also just... I mean, but Ireland, to be... Oh, sorry, Phil. Ireland, to be fair to them, have looked really good.
They have, haven't they?
Yeah.
They look legit.
I was talking about... this in the pub last night as I was watching the France game. This Six Nations is going to be monumental.
Yeah.
Monumental. Because the weak teams, well, obviously Italy are still weak, so, you know, they're done. But the weak team would be Scotland, and they're not weak.
They're not weak.
They are not weak.
Not Can you imagine if it was five weak. Nations, how good it would be?
Yeah, it'd be awesome. Wales are the current Grand Slam holders. And then you've got... Well, okay, so let's do it that way.
So the weakest, and they are not weak, is Scotland.
Yep. Then you've got the Grand Slam holders, who no one was able to lay a hand on Wales last year. Then you've got three middling teams, England, France, and Ireland.
Ireland.
They're not middling teams.
Ireland are playing their best rugby in years. They look... This autumn, they destroyed Japan. I thought it was Japan playing badly. No, it was Ireland playing immensely well. Then they destroyed the All Blacks, which was, I think, the scoreboard was not reflective of how dominant Ireland were. And then they've obviously put Argentina comfortably to the sword, and it's a very good Argentina team. And they're Ireland changing up their team a little bit as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Balakoon, Carberry coming in.
Yeah,
Casey on the bench. So that, yeah, it's really exciting for Ireland. I like the cut of their jib, and what I really like again, I use the word balance with France. Is Ireland are having a go when it's on?
Yeah, they're offloading more. It's one of those with France. They know when to calm it down, put the boot through it, keep it up the jumper. But also, they recognise when it's on and they can play. Yeah. They want to play and they're willing to have a go.
Yeah, it's when you think about it, it becomes very clear why South African Rugby Union wants a little bit more of Northern Hemisphere rugby, a little less of Southern Hemisphere stuff. And you can see building up to Six Nations now exactly why that would be.
Mm. Oh, the intensity of these games has been just, it's been incredible.
Right, well, let's round this off. Your final thoughts then of the autumn tours as a success compared to previous years?
Progressive. Well, I'm glad it was in this order. Started out piss poor, ended the last two weekends. Absolutely epic.
Yeah.
Yeah, spectacular.
I'll go with that. And we're still getting plenty of Tier 2 stuff peppered in as well.
Oh, yeah. It was a draw between Fiji and Georgia, 15-all.
I'd love to have seen that.
In Madrid.
Yeah.
I'd love to have seen that.
Yeah, that would have been great.
And actually, as we're running this off, are we making a decision yet about Tier 2 tour, Portugal or Spain?
Have we got the fixture list for Rugby Europe Championship 2022 yet?
Last I checked... No, but I will check again very soon. So I don't think it's been announced yet, because I think there is still another game for the Rugby Europe Championship No, not.
Which weekend is Super Saturday?
17th of March.
Yeah, around that, around Paddy's Day.
Paddy's Day.
It is.
Normally.
It is. Because we're either in New York or Madrid or Bucharest.
Well, there's an Irish pub everywhere.
Yeah.
Paddy's Day in Lisbon.
And we might even, I don't know, I mean, if we do a tier two tour, might even dust off the boots, get Egg Chasers RFC up and running for a friendly game on the Friday night.
That's a great idea.
Over 35s only, allow me to score 20 to 30 tries, something like that.
Phil's looking it up, Martin Coates emailed us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com, following on from last week's podcast where we were talking about Wales Fiji, he said the reason Fiji play better with a man in the sin bin is because they just play as two sevens teams.
Perfect. Love it.
There you go. More natural.
Yeah.
Very good.
Not announced yet.
Right.
Watch this space. But Portugal versus Spain sounds like it might be
perfect.
The perfect.
Although only if it's on Super Saturday.
Yeah. So Rugby Europe Championship. If you want to have loads and loads of fans from the UK and around the world, on the last one to Madrid, we had people coming from Chile.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one of the shirts we've got to get up in the dungeon.
And Mexico. Kevin Doyle, long time listener, friend of the pod.
For a live
amazing,
podcast,
amazing singer.
For a live podcast, we had people flying in from America for the
Chicago.
Chicago for the day.
Yes, that was awesome.
Madness. That's a madness.
So yeah, if you want to get some proper rugby fans coming to your nation, Portugal, get your fixture against Spain on the Super Saturday weekend, please.
The reason why the fixtures have not been announced, I think, is because this year's tournament has not yet been concluded. It concludes on the 18th of December with the Netherlands versus Spain in Amsterdam.
Amsterdam, and, you say?
And then presumably, at some point shortly after this year's tournament is concluded,
starts all over again.
They can announce the fixtures for next year.
Right. Okay. Watch this space. Tier two tour potential for March. Keep that Paddy's Day weekend free.
Yes.
Right, Tim, you take this home. I'm going to get some whiskey glasses.
contacteggchasers@gmail.com. He's at Jay Beardmore. We're patreon.com/eggchasers. If you haven't listened to the other podcast already, it will be in your feed, talking about OSJB's specialist subjects, scandal and local grassroots level rugby. He'll be in his element. He actually seemed to enjoy that though, Phil, I've got to say.
So that was JB Hell.
Yeah.
Wait until he gets to JB Heaven.
This is going to... Yeah. Yeah. So hit subscribe in the podcast feed wherever you get yours and let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.